Hello there. You're listening to Lady Radio, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory on CITR 101.9 FM. Lady Radio is sponsored by the UBC Women's Center. I am Dora, and today we are here with Kelly, Elizabeth, Cassandra, Callie, and Paula. And happy birthday to Cassandra! Woohoo! Full 21. You can now consume alcohol in the States. We have a jam-packed episode for you guys today. We're going to start off with an interview with Jillian Christmas, a local slam poet and artistic director of the Versus Festival, followed by an in-studio talk with artist Christine D'Onofrio. But before that, we're going to be playing Tonight by Ashley Shadow on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Can't settle down into this feeling, afraid I might stop breathing. I don't feel it cause I want to. I don't feel it cause I want to. Still hear your judgments, they don't go away. I've said some lies this more than you can say. I do what I do cause I want to. Do what I do, cause I want to. She is getting by better than you and I. She didn't choose it cause she wants to.
April showers, Discord or flowers, Devours is our cover artist, coming out strong with his new album, Late Bloomer. This issue also features Ashley Shadow's self-titled release, Kim Gray's Perfume, the latest on Late Spring, Karaoke at Pub 340, and more. We have album reviews of So Loki and Black Wizard, and live show reviews of Acid Mothers, Temples, and Daughters. Say
goodbye. Discorder is also reviving our old rant column as Hothead, a section dedicated to your honest feedback on the magazine and the scene we write about. Pick up a copy of Discorder magazine at your favorite local record store or retailer, or visit discorder.ca for a list of all our distribution locations. And if you want to get involved in Discorder, contact editor.discorder@citr.ca.
Attention grad students, share your research, find out what's going on in other disciplines, approach your work from a new angle. Check out Fire Talks, the interdisciplinary discussion forum sponsored by the Research Commons at Kerner Library. Visit bit.ly/firetalk for more information.
All right. Welcome back to Lady Radio. That was Tonight by Ashley Shadow. And now we've got Jillian Christmas on the line, and she's going to be talking to us about Vancouver Slam and the Versus Festival. So hi, Jillian. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We're super stoked that you're here. And I guess biggest on our menu is about the Versus Festival. So would you be able to tell us a little bit about it in terms of when it got started, how it sort of changed over the years, what happens in a Versus Festival?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. So Versus Festival of Words is a festival that runs for 11 days here in Vancouver, really centralized around Commercial Drive neighborhood, with the exception of the first 3 days of our festival that happen at the Vancouver Public Library, the central branch. And those 3 days are entirely free admission, and they feature the youth component of our festival. It's a BC-wide competition with 16 different schools competing together, not against each other, but together for the BC Championship. And then, you know, within the rest of the Versus Festival, we have all kinds of incredible shows, showcases. We've got, you know, spoken word marquees. We've got conversation groups like Talk the Talk. We've got a number of professional development masterclasses, and like singer-songwriters, working with poets, all kinds of things. Open mics, really anything that you want, you know, to fill your plate with. There's something for you there. There are literary magazines that will be launching their lit mags that those, you know, days throughout the festival. And then, yeah, there's really something for everyone, including the Canadian Individual Poetry Slam Championship that happens every year as part of Versus Festival. And that was really how Versus Festival began, from housing that Canadian Individual Poetry Slam Championship. And traditionally, the winner of that championship goes on to represent English-speaking Canada on the World Slam stage. So it's quite a thing.
Really. Oh, yeah. Wow. So that was the beginning, like that was like the inception of our Versus Festival, was hosting the Canadian Individual Poetry Slam Championships here?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And it has always been here in Vancouver. We're very proud that we get to keep it here, and that poets travel to us from across the country, and they so love doing that. You know, coming to Vancouver every spring is such a treat. And then they get, you know, the winner gets to go on to be celebrated on the stage in Paris, France. So that's really...
Oh, wow, it's in Paris this year.
Well, the World Poetry Slam happens in Paris every year. Yeah, so Canadian Individual Poetry Slam chooses, you know, the person who will represent English-speaking Canada, and then they go on to the world stage. Yeah, and it's quite a treat to be able to send one of our poets to represent us there.
Absolutely. So, Jillian, tell us a bit about your history with Versus. Like, how did you first, I guess, encounter it? I know you are like quite the renowned poet, actually. I have a friend in Slovenia who sent me one of your poems, being like, "Do you know Jillian Christmas?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do, actually. I mean,
oh,
she's like a local, so that's cool." But yeah, tell us a little bit about how you specifically got involved with Versus, because I know you're the artistic director this year, and that's quite the title. Artistic director?
Not always, but I have been with the festival for a number of years now. This is my fourth year programming for the festival. So for the last 3 years, including this year, I've been the artistic director. The year previous to that, I kind of shared the directorship with two other wonderful organizers, Jessica Mason-Paul and Chris Gilpin, who's now moved on to bigger and better, wonderful things out there in arts communities. And we have a wonderful managing director this year, Aaron Kirsch, who's stepped in and has done really phenomenal work. But I got brought into the project. I actually competed in Canadian Individual Poetry Slam when I first came to Vancouver from Toronto back in 2011, and I was just a little wee baby poet. I mean, I'm still pretty new to the poetry game, you know, respectively. But I was very new, especially to the scene here in Vancouver, and it was very important to me because I didn't have a lot of friends here. Mm-hmm. And all of these people that I know and love from across Canada came out here to celebrate Canadian Indies. And So, you know, when they left and I was still hungry for a way to get involved, I decided that I would volunteer with the organization, Vancouver Poetry House, and I did that really any way that I could see room for myself. Mm-hmm. And I was asked to volunteer coordinate for the next festival for Hullabaloo, and I did so, and I had such a great time. And then the following year, I was asked to help direct, and the rest is history. I'm still here.
Wow, would you look at that. So as artistic director, what does that involve? Like, do you have like a curating process, a specific vision you'd like to like incorporate in the festival this year? Like what does that look like, and what do you what are like you bringing that's very specifically or uniquely Jillian Christmas to the Versus Festival?
Well, first I will say that the curating of the festival is not only up to me. Mm-hmm. I have sort of like that veto and that last word, yeah, about it. And definitely a lot of the ideas are things that I bring to the festival. But we have, we every year strike a committee, a programming committee, so that we can discuss and have like a wide range of ideas coming to us so that it's not just me sitting here like, you know, pulling
yes,
strings,
no.
But so that,
yeah,
we have a variety of experience and, you know, ideas from all different angles. And so I'm very lucky to have a good team with me doing that. But one of our main goals in planning the festival is really to just create a wonderful mix of artists from a variety of backgrounds. We specifically focus on artists who have been in some way marginalized in, mm-hmm, in way like places in society. So maybe that's women artists, maybe it's you know, a First Nations artists or Black or queer or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, we just want to make sure that we are giving space to people who have traditionally had space taken away from them. Mm-hmm. That's super important to us. And so you'll see that throughout the festival. You know, Hullabaloo, our youth aspect of the festival, is loaded with three female headliners. All of the headliners for Hullabaloo are women, and that's really cool to me. And not, yeah, just women, but like women of color and you know, First Nations women. That's that, like, to me is just super empowering. And you know, there's like oftentimes people will say, oh, well, we just didn't know who to book or whatever, yeah, when trying to do this. And it's obvious to me when I get to see this roster of artists that we have an embarrassment of riches. We have so many wonderful artists, and there's no reason not to have a diverse stage. So we just,
absolutely,
keep trying to do that. And hopefully we present a festival that people really can find themselves within.
Definitely. Now, so I personally, I have been involved with UBC Slam for like several years. I'm no longer,
yeah,
at UBC. And I hosted a bunch of slams, and it was interesting, even in just those 4 years that I was working with everybody, to see, number one, how slam poetry as a sort of performance genre has grown. Like, it's absolutely taken off. And also, yeah, to witness the different voices that we would have come out on our stage, and it be, mm-hmm, like, it became quite the like supportive safe space for people, which I think is,
really is
like quite spectacular. So that's really wonderful to hear that this is sort of the experience you're curating here. So you've been involved for like a number of years with Slam, just sort of generally,
yeah,
in the past, and in, I'm presuming, several different places, Toronto, now Vancouver, and I'm sure your poetry has taken you elsewhere as well. So do you have any sort of reflections on, I guess, sort of the diversity of the stages that you've encountered, like as a performer yourself and as people you've collaborated with and things like that? Or what's it sort of like in Vancouver? Are we getting better at it? Because just generally, I'm aware that sort of literary spaces can seem fairly dominated sometimes by certain segments of the population who like to take up a lot of space, like white men.
And
they get,
yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah,
somewhere out there,
yeah,
and they get a lot of credit too, a lot of literary credit when,
yeah,
when tons of very moving, very powerful art is being done. We just don't seem to hear about it. So I don't know. That was a,
yeah,
bunch of words.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think that's one of the things that's really special about spoken word and slam is that it has a very low sort of barrier to entry,
mm-hmm,
which is not to say that it's like lowest common denominator. It's what it means is that there are spaces that often, you know, reject people or like create spaces that are exclusionary, and so a lot of those spaces do exist within, you know, educational facilities or, you know, publishing houses, or, like, you know, all kinds of institutions. And things are changing, certainly. Things are shifting. One of the launches we have for the festival this year is a Lit Mag that is focused specifically on spoken word artists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see that definitely happening. But I think one of the things about spoken word, in really the tradition of spoken word, you know, like all the way back in carrying cultural stories, you know, all of that, that's like, it's really fundamental to a lot of cultures, a lot of like marginalized people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why you see that sort of permeating spoken word stages. And I've had the great honor, you know, I've been very lucky to travel a lot of places for many different festivals to perform, to volunteer, to help out. One of the best that I've seen in North America is the Women of the World Poetry Slam that happens. It moves around within the States, and I was just there in Brooklyn supporting our Vancouver Poetry Slam rep, Tasha Racino. And let me tell you, that festival is something that I definitely take a ton of ideas from every year. Mm-hmm. And I chat with all of the organizers there, because they really have this magical way of bringing people together, even though it's a competition.
Yeah.
There's a spirit of support, and it's really a beautiful thing, and you see all kinds of voices and stories highlighted. And finding myself in that experience, it's just important to me to be able to recreate that here for the people who are traveling to Vancouver.
Absolutely. Just for the sake of time, a few more questions. Number one, will you be performing at the Versus Festival this year? And what are sort of your two like big highlights that you're really looking forward to as like sort of groundbreaking and new, like a new sort of flavor to Versus this year in Vancouver?
Yeah, absolutely. I will be performing.
Excellent.
And I say that like a little hesitantly, because I sort of made a rule for myself that I would not perform in the festival in past years. It's not a thing that I've done.
Fair enough.
But I have been asked to perform by a couple of the community stages in the festival. We invite community stages in to sort of share space with us during the festival, so events that are already happening in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, Sarah Bynoe's Teen Angst Poetry, she's asked me to help in hosting that, and also to read one of my embarrassing childhood poems.
Oh, fantastic.
So you'll get to see a little bit of a retrospective on my work there, which will be very like thoroughly embarrassing for me, and also, you know, it's good to laugh at ourselves, so that'll be fun.
Definitely. If nobody knew you before, this would be a great introduction to Jillian Christmas,
right?
I feel.
It's going to be really wonderful. And I'm also going to be making a little appearance at the Remixer event that is called Jangle and Shout. It happens in our gallery space, and it's called Space. It's on Clark. It's an awesome event because it runs for 5 hours. We have five different sets throughout the day, and basically you'll get a taste of so many of the festival artists. They're all going to be doing about 2 to 5 minutes, and you'll get to sort of mingle and mix in that space, where we also will have some visual poetic art on display. So that's going to be really cool, and I'll be reading a poem there as well. Those are places where you can see me, but really there's so many festival artists.
It's 11 days.
I'm always in Vancouver. Check out these other people. They're really cool. I would say that my top two picks right now are one, There Be Monsters, which is happening at the York, and I'll tell you why, because it features Kai Cheng Tom, who's traveling to us from Toronto. It features Amber Dawn, and it features Ivan Coyote, all of whom who have written work specifically for this show. It happens for one night only at the York Theater, and it has an original score with live musicians who are going to be performing. So, like, if you miss this show, I apologize. Like, you're going to be missing out.
That's a show I've seen pop up around on Facebook already. I'm like, I gotta get it.
Get your tickets real fast, I would say. Another one that is going to be very dear to a lot of people in the festival, including myself, is the We Believe You open mic and showcase. And we just wanted to create space for stories. You know, there's been a lot happening, a lot of people affected by some of the stuff in the news, some of the, you know, things happening around rape culture and rulings around that. And I really just wanted to create space for people to speak their stories around that, around trauma, sexual trauma, assault, abuse, and also have space to celebrate, you know, their survival through that and, like, coming through on the other side. And so I'm even a little emotional right now. But there will be musicians there who are really phenomenal. Muchia Makatumpeg, who's so inspiring and so wonderful and was with us last year for the festival, and Lexi Marie, who is a dear friend and also just a healing musician. Both of them are going to be there to perform their own sets as well as to accompany some of the poetry that comes to the stage. So
wow,
please be there to support.
Wow,
it's going to be wonderful.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for those recommendations. Everybody, do that. Look those up. That's spectacular and so, so timely and so, so necessary. And so we heard you maybe had something to perform for us today.
Oh, I can perform a little something for
you. Yeah,
how much time do I have?
How much time? We've got a wee bit of time, so probably like no more than like, I don't know, two minutes.
I got 30 seconds.
Oh,
there we go.
Spectacular.
You ready?
Yes, let's hear it.
Wonderful. This is a poem called The Gospel of Breaking, and it goes like this. Dear God, is it wrong that so long after our separation, I still see your face everywhere? The holy water between my legs when she touches me, the wet in her eyes, head pressed back, her sinner mouth too full of heaven. This bruised knee city, springing with all the wrong kinds of love and all the best company to enjoy it in. I was birthed into a church too comfortable with a God who would make closets into coffins, but I have been born again into the religion of lost souls, baptized under bourbon-kissed streetlight and a halo of smoke plumes. There is laughter and blood in my cheek, and more than enough of it to feed the masses. Today, I see you in every busted lip and backroom hand job. My God, who has been so quiet, this must be your work, as baffling as all of your other mercies.
Wow. I'm like snapping and falling apart over here. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Jillian. And I imagine if that is anything like the flavor of what Verse is going to be this year, it is going to be a phenomenal festival. So thank you so much for joining us tonight.
I really appreciate you.
Appreciate you being here and sharing a little bit of your life's work with us. So everyone, make sure to check out the Verses Festival. It's running April 21st to May 1st all around Vancouver. And so we're going to take a quick break and be back in studio with visual artist Christine D'Onofrio. And so this is Camera by Pale Red on Lady Radio CITR 101.9.
There's a
Club for Discord and Magazine at our fundraiser at the Ansa Club on Saturday, April 23rd. We've got one epic night planned with performances by Frog Eyes, Weird Candles, The Backhomes, Malcolm Jack, and Experience This, with special guest DJs and MCs to keep you dancing. There will also be a silent auction and a sale of exclusive back issues of Discorder magazine from the 1980s to now, with all proceeds supporting the publication and printing costs of your free, independent Discorder magazine. Tickets are $10 for CITR members, $15 in advance on brownpapertickets.com, or $18 at the door. Head over to discorder.ca for all the information.
Beppy Chris Band presents... Difficult music, harsh electronics, spoken word, cut up / collage, and a general Chris Band weirdness. Sunday, 7 to 9 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to Lady Radio on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. That was Camera by Pale Red. And now we're here with Christine D'Onofrio, who's an artist practicing here in Vancouver. She has exhibited across Canada and also teaches at UBC. Rach and I were both lucky enough to take her class last term. It was wonderful. She works in many mediums, including photography, video, digital media, interactive media, printmaking, sculpture, bookworks, and installation. Hi, Christine.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. So to start off, could you just tell us a little about your practice?
Sure, that's a big question, but I'll try and maybe talk about it through topics and maybe try and describe some works. So I'm interested in many things, the nature of artistic practice, so why people make art, you know, what it means to understanding culture and human beings. I'm really interested in the dialogue of art history. I do have a particular interest in photography and lens-based work, so although I'm multidisciplinary, multimedia, I do want to understand what happens as we look through the lens. I also enjoy specific topics in my work, so I have an interest in humor or the comedic, jokes, mm-hmm. funny things, and feminism is sort of a thread through all my work. And I like to understand feminism through, I guess you can say, behaviors. So things like exploitation, or not maybe behaviors, maybe power oppressions that happen. So exploitation, humiliation, virtue, desire, liberty, capital.
Right. And speaking of humor and feminism, I know you have a work that's like unfinished jokes, right? And so it was a feminist, a lesbian, and a nun walk into a bar, if I'm remembering correctly. So what was the, you know, like what was that idea behind that work particularly?
Okay, so I had actually made a really big print letterpress work before it where I was interested in this one particular joke, how many feminists does it take to screw in a light bulb? and it's funny without the punchline, but it's sort of this structure of a joke that we use on many figures, you know, usually to make fun of them and be superior. And so I wanted to understand all the different iterations of that, the answer to that joke through a chronological time. And so I had created this 22-page book of all the different answers. So there's, I think it, the first answer from the 1960s is that's not funny because feminists aren't funny. And the last answer of that book is that's a trick question, sorry, and feminists have never been able to change anything. And so that was sort of the end of the book, kind of hurt. And so out of that, making an entire book out of punchlines, mm-hmm. I wanted to have that moment where it could just be about the imposition of a joke and a joke. As soon as someone is about to tell you a joke, you automatically go into the contract with them, right? You're going to believe anything. The chicken mm-hmm. can cross a road and it could be a real thing. And so I was interested in the idea that as soon as we phrase something that sounds like a joke, mm-hmm. you're going to open your mind to anything being possible. And so, and you're also going to answer that joke based on your own being your own, you know, history, your mm-hmm. own interests, your own connections between a feminist, a nun, and a lesbian. Right. And so, you know, it might be exploitative, it might be kind, who knows? But mm-hmm. I didn't want to answer it.
Wow. Yeah. And I know that, you know, in addition to the sort of printmaking that you've done, you've also worked a lot with this idea of the body in your artwork. So what is the importance of the body to your artwork? And also, you talked about sort of working on conquering the actual body now. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So there's a long history of the female body in art. For centuries, we've seen it mostly reclining and nude and for a particular gaze. So I've always had an interest in that sort of, you know, that's, as the girls say, that's how you get into the Met Museum. You're on the wall as the subject rather than the artist.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Those Gorilla Girls, great artist group. In the 60s, there was a lot of, you know, feminist artwork that came out that had a lot of performance-based practices, and a lot of sort of body art came out of the time. And there was a lot of artists that actually criticized this, and they said, you know, getting naked for art can only be exploitative. So Mary Kelly's one of them. She denied showing the female body because she felt no matter what, the gaze is always exploitative. Some people would claim that it was narcissistic work. So no matter what, when a woman depicts herself, it comes off as narcissistic. So I was scared. I was scared of actually showing the body. So I would always use mostly synthetic objects that reference the body or things that would identify, you know, what it meant to be feminine. But I was scared to use the actual body. And because I was scared, I felt it was important. So there was a work where I finally depicted a female body, and I wanted to depict it in a way that would have all these sort of convoluted big stories wrapped up in the gesture. And that was my piece, Falling Woman, which I hope, you know, acknowledged all the power relations that actually happen in the politic of the female body. Yeah.
sort of related to that, in your artist statement that you have posted on your website, you write that your work angles on feminist strategies, but you are critical of it. Can you explain that further?
Sure. That's a tough question. I'm critical of everything. I think we should be, as you know, academics, as artists, as people who want to keep evolving. I think antagonism is a beautiful democratic structure that helps you evolve meaning and continue a conversation. So when I say I'm critical of feminist strategies, I mean it's a very new thing. You know, women just got the vote, you know, about 100 years ago, and they finally saw advances happening, and they got all these new liberties and all this new freedom. And what do you do with it? There's no example to follow. So, you know, a lot of self-exploitation is happening. So we got like Kim Kardashian taking pictures for Instagram. That's quite exploitative of her image. But then, you know, I think she criticized Bette Midler for body shaming her, and it turned into this big debate. So, mm-hmm. you know, what is right feminism or wrong feminism in mm-hmm. scare quotes? And, you know, what is our new liberty? What are we going to do with that? You know, if we're trying to regain power, what kind of power, you know, should we be trying to regain? So I think it's a lot more complicated. And because it's so complicated, I'm always going to ask tough questions of this very new thing, still kind of new. So I think that's what I meant by being critical of it is you should always be asking, why is this going to work? What does it mean that this is, you know, our new way of understanding? And always let it evolve. Don't get stuck in understanding something in one way. You know, this is feminism. Because that just sort of co-opts it into a very specific thing, puts it into a box, and that's the only way you get to know it. And feminism is literally about change and potential, mm-hmm. right? It's about what isn't stable, about seeing the other side. So I think of all things, it should be something that should be ever-growing. And yeah. So that's what I mean by that statement.
Wow, I think you really got us thinking a little bit. I mean, I'm definitely thinking about sort of my take on feminism now that you've said those kinds of things. But in terms of, you know, what to do with that new power, I guess this is the best question to follow up with that is sort of, in a male-dominated art world, how have people responded to your artwork given its feminist leanings, right? And you sort of using that new power, right, to express the feminist movement and express sort of your views and questions about feminism.
Yeah.
So how have people responded?
Yeah, I mean, when you go into an art history class, you know, you're probably seeing, what, 80% male artists. Mm-hmm. And every, you know, female in that room has to put on a mindset to understand the work. And I think women have learned to do this. We've learned to see the world through the patriarchal gaze, right? It's kind of natural for women to learn how to do this. And I don't think men necessarily know how to do this. So you know, some men will see their own thing in some of my work. Some men will actually empathize with what I'm trying to discuss. And some won't get it, or they won't even try. Reception could be, you know, I've been called tokenizing, you know, political for political sake. You know, you do get criticisms. But I've also had a lot of great, wonderful interactions with viewers that have made it all worthwhile. So you just keep doing it. Yep.
What interests you about teaching art?
I just came from a long term, so this is a big question. I guess what I like about art and the fact that it's in academia is that it's a very different way of knowing. That can be, you know, people think it's a criticism, that it's subjective, but isn't that a beautiful thing that it's subjective and we all get to have our own way of bringing something to art? And so I guess what I love to teach art is to see someone come into their own with their own investments, with their own drive, their own sort of fire in their belly, and figure out how to execute that into this magical object or this magical event or this magical provocation or experience. And I don't know, I have the best job in the world. I literally get to see people flourish in things that they care about in ways that make other people, the viewer, care too. And have an experience. So, teaching art is a absolute pleasure because it's very personal. It's very different. No two students have ever been the same, and I get to see very different things start to come through students. I don't have a textbook. Mm-hmm. We write the book. My students write the book of what's happening. So yeah.
Do you ever find that what your students are doing or what you see in your students informs your own work at all?
I try and keep my own work out of the classroom because I would never want to do that to the students. I'm definitely, you know, I'm listening to the cultural connections that the students are making. We make the best art when we actually see our own references come to fruition. And so it's interesting to see what, you know, new generations are bringing to the language of art. But it's never influenced because it's always their references to their world. I have my own references. But there was one time when I was describing a gossipy story in the art world about Anna Mendieta and Carl Andre. And a student in the class, and this is a casual conversation, it wasn't a lecture, he said, it was about this woman who had fallen off her balcony and to her death, unfortunately. And he made a joke and he said, "What, feminists can't fly?" And at that point, I thought, this would be a great piece. So you could say I stole his idea, but I think I provoked it. and he was fine with me pursuing it. But it led to an artwork to have this sort of, aren't feminists magical that they can, you know, fly and avoid all harm? Mm-hmm. Which, of course, didn't happen for Anna Mendieta, but
Something I've noticed in the visa classes that I've taken is that the students tend to be predominantly female, and we talked about this a little, and you said maybe not, but just for example, in my print class this year, there are around 20 students, and only one of them was male.
Oh, wow.
And in my painting class, there were only maybe 3 male students. And I was just wondering if you have any ideas about why that is and whether that strong female majority continues into the world of practicing artists.
Yeah, I think the university in general has more females in it. Statistically, I'm not sure, though. I am not talking from a place of knowledge right now. But I think the university just... And I think it also depends on male-dominated majors. I think engineering and physics tend to be male-dominated. I think when there's more females finally in the medical school, that it's actually outweighing how many males are becoming doctors. So we'd have to get stats on this. But yeah, I guess it feels like it's female dominated. But I teach digital classes and it feels like a good even mix, maybe because it's this, you know, computer digital world that men might feel comfortable in. So I can't really speak on the stats. I can't really say that they are it. But, I can't deny that it's equal, if not a bit female dominated. And then when you get out into the professional world, I can't say that the stat is the same. There are far less women who can live off just their art than there are men. So there's a lot of women who teach, myself included, to support our art careers or find other ways to support their art careers. And there's a lot of men, even if you look on auction results, there's, you know, the top 100 highest selling auction results, it tends to be a male dominated list in general. There's still a lot of work to be done. I'd probably say that for a lot of industries, out of graduates mm-hmm. coming out of the university, you know, female dominated, and then you go into the industry and it's all of a sudden male dominated. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's always work to be done, and this is why we persist and go by the merits of our work and try and get those stats changed.
I think one last question I have for you, Christine, is I know that there's a lot of people in our collective, in the women's collective and here at Lady Radio, who are artists. And so I guess my question would be, what is something that you'd like to say, or what is the message that you'd like to give to young female artists who are, you know, making work and making art?
Advice. Oh, boy.
I know I threw you a little bit of a curveball there, but
it's a tough one. I feel like it should be really, really good advice. But, I guess when I look at my students and I think of the most successful student, it's one that found their reason for making and their reason to be excited for doing within themselves. And it might be a harder battle and it might take longer and it might seem a little tougher and more defeated. But the truth is, in the end, on the other side of it, it's much more worthwhile because it comes from a really, really true real place. So I guess my advice is to always come from a really true place. Don't compromise what you know is important. That would be my big advice. And to find that place it's a tough, really self-reflective, insightful job. So yeah, it's important.
Wow. Thank you so much, Christine. So that concludes our interview. And if you liked what you heard, Christine is actually having a talk at the Vancouver Art Gallery tomorrow for Mashup. And that is at 3:30 p.m., I believe.
Yes.
Is that right?
I think there's three times.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it's at 3:30 p.m. and at 4. And so Christine will be talking about 3 of her favorite works from the exhibit. And so if you are interested in that, make sure you go tomorrow to the Vancouver Art Gallery to listen to her talk.
Yeah, it would be great.
Thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
Oh, hey, what's up? So that's our show today. Thank you so much, Christine, for being on. That was dope. Wow. We have a few events coming up this weekend that we think that everyone should know about. I'm going to let Elizabeth take it.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, so to start off, if you've been following our social media presence at all over the last couple days, as in yesterday and today, we are having some ticket giveaways. So there are two films playing at Van City Theater, both April 17th and 20th, about Nell Shipman. Nell Shipman is a Victoria-born woman film pioneer. She was a writer, producer, actress, and animal trainer. Yeah, and so 95 years ago was making films in the Idaho wilderness, and there is a documentary about her called The Girl from God's Country, as well as one of her films called Grubsteak. They've actually done a Grubsteak remix, so I suppose it's a re-edit of that film, and those are both playing at Van City as part of Canadian Film Week, as I said. If you want to go and see either of these films, one of them, The Girl from God's Country, we have tickets to the screening this Sunday at 5 p.m., and Grubsteak Remix on the same day, Sunday, April 17th at 6:30. If you want to go to either of those films, we have two passes to each. Go on our Facebook and be the first to comment on any of those posts, or on our Instagram, we have the Grubsteak Remix giveaway on there. Be the first to comment. Say whatever you want. Give us a nice shout out. Say hi. Say whatever you like. Win some passes. It'll be great. You want to go see these movies. It really ties in with our wonderful Women in Film episode that we had a couple weeks back. So make sure to go check that out. The people at Van City have been lovely enough to extend those to us and to seek us out for that. So thank you so much. Yeah, go see those movies. That's great. And also... we have Record Store Day tomorrow. CITR and CJSF, which is SFU's community or campus radio station, are going to be broadcasting live from record stores all over town. So make sure to tune in at any point tomorrow. There will also be, of course, as Record Store Day, there are going to be a ton of performances at record stores all over town from a bunch of local artists, and a whole bunch of special releases and deals. So be sure to check that out. I think also, Rachel, you wanted to plug... Oh, no! Dora wanted to plug. I didn't know who had written this note. Dora, what is it that you would like to mention?
Just kind of going off of the Nell Shipman thing, there is another like female-made movie playing at Van City called FSM. It's about dating and the electronic music scene here in Vancouver. Really dope, by Melanie Jones. She's really, really cool. I actually interviewed her on my radio show on Thursday. Tickets are on like the Real World Facebook page if you want to hit us up for free tickets for that.
Do you want to spell that out for people listening?
Oh, yeah, because then people won't get it. It's real, like a film real, like R-E-E-L, and then like world, like to spin, like world, W-H-I-R-L-E-D. So Real World.
Yes, search that on Facebook. Get some passes. When is that playing?
That's playing tomorrow, the 16th, and then Monday, the 18th.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Dora.
You're welcome. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. That was dope.
Yeah. And thanks, everyone, for joining us this
Thanks,
week.
Jillian, for joining us. Thanks, Christine, for joining us. And everyone in the studio. That was dope. And just a reminder that Lady Radio is sponsored by the Women's Center. And we're going to be back next week to talk about social media. In honor of Cassandra's birthday, we're going to be playing some classic Alana Miles. This one goes out to Cass. Have a lovely weekend. Adios.